Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, on the studios of WMOT-FM. A children's book that begins Dick and Jane Go to School is as quaint and of its time as a rerun of Leave It to Beaver. Today's children, beset with the challenges of divorce, blended families, and parental addiction, need more sophisticated yet age-appropriate reading material. Material like The Dragon Who Lives at Our House and Big Changes in the Crow Family. Two fresh fables from Elaine Mitchell Palmore, director of MTSU's Child Development Center, and published by Rising Star Studios. Children's literature for the 21st century after this from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. Middle Tennessee Education Center will host a celebration of education, including a special preview of its expanding curriculum, from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 2nd, at the center, which is located at 200 Dover Street in Shelbyville. Officials will be on hand to explain how the center can help students chart a path to improved educational credentials and more fulfilling, higher-paying jobs. And Dr. Katie Foss of MTSU and Dr. Kathy Roberts Ford of the University of South Carolina were named winners of the 2012 James W. Carey Media Research Award competition, sponsored by the Carl Couch Center for Social and Internet Research. Foss and Ford are co-authors of the article The Facts, The Color, The Facts, The Idea of a Report in American Print Culture, 1885 to 1910. For MTSU News anytime, go to mtsunews.com.
Elaine Mitchell Palmore, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Big Changes in the Crow Family is your latest book, but let's start with The Dragon Who Lives in Our House.
Okay.
Which you wrote first. The dragon's name is Al, and he spends a lot of time with the father of this four-person family. What impact does that have on the family?
Well, his impact at the beginning of the book is minimal. He's very small. He's very friendly. He helps the dad of the family have a really good time. The children like him. He seems to help everyone be a little bit more festive. And then he gets bigger. And when he gets bigger, he eventually takes over the dad's life. And the pictures in the book with the family on the outside of the window looking in and Al and the dad, I think it's very very dramatic. And it's true of a lot of families.
I noticed in some of those illustrations that there were several bottles of beer at Dad's cookout in the backyard.
Right.
Is Al short for alcoholism?
Actually, the way the book is written, Al could be any sort of addiction that anybody has. It could be food. It could be drugs. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. But the story was a little bit easier to illustrate with the bottles. You know, with the bottles there or the drink, like when he's at work or whatever.
Yeah. Al helps Daddy get really wild. He frolics, but when he gets to the point where he's disrupting his son's ball game, things take a turn for the worse.
Right. And I put the word antics in there because I think it's a good word. And as counselors or parents even are reading the book to children, they can then explain to them what antics are. But he does. He gets thrown out of the soccer game. In the picture, Al the Dragon is actually driving the car, and the dad is riding. And you can tell, you know, when they're arriving there, that they're in a pretty rare mood.
Yeah. So Daddy's not just driving under the influence. He is so under the influence that Al is actually doing the driving.
That's right.
Now, even though Al causes a lot of problems, these color illustrations by Norris Hall, which are really beautiful.
Wonderful illustrations.
And he did both books.
He did.
Always show Al as this relatively benign, even friendly dragon with big eyes, not a threatening, fire-breathing creature.
Right.
Was that something you discussed with Hall?
Yes. With the first book, I didn't know what I was doing at all. And When I sent Norris the story, I was very careful to put these elaborate illustrator's notes at the bottom. And the illustrators, which, and I didn't use any for the second story because Norris is so intuitive and so wonderful. But the illustrator's notes said that I didn't want the dragon to scare small children. I mean, if you are in a situation where your parents are addicted and they've been drug off to jail in the middle of the night or whatever, the last thing you need to see is this horrifying dragon. So the pictures of the dragon are toned down a little bit so that it won't scare the younger reader. But I'm also hoping that with the book, if you have been through treatment and if you have these issues in your life, you can look at these pictures and say, see this? This is the way it felt when it happened to me.
And the dragon is benign, but it's not as though you're trying to say that addiction is a benign, friendly creature. It's just that if you are the small child of an addicted parent, you've had enough scary stuff go on in your life already.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a very scary thing. And I've had personal experience with it. I've been teaching for a long, long time. And every school that I've ever been in has had at least one case, and sometimes 10 cases, of parents who forget to pick their children up at school more than once. And I had a child once when I was in Florida, public school, sitting in group. It was the last thing that we discussed before we chose what we were going to do for the morning. And she raised her hand and she said, "The police came and took my daddy to jail last night." And I was so taken aback by it that I didn't know what to say. So we discussed it after. Mm-hmm. And after we started to discuss it, I started to dig for resources. What can I say to this child? How can I explain to her? Because she kept saying that, you know, well, why couldn't he just quit or whatever? I mean, she was a little older. She was like fourth grade.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything. And so that's when I decided I was going to write the book.
Dad goes to a place called Treatment in the book, and where he meets other people who have dragons of their own. Now, not everybody's dragon is the same size.
Right, or the same color.
Uh-huh.
And not everybody's relationship with their dragon is the same. There's one illustration in there where a lady is being actually drug across the back of the scene by her dragon. So some people at Treatment are still struggling with it. Some have surrendered to it. You know, it's. I think everybody in the picture is at a little bit different stage in their recovery. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the way it is at Treatment. I think it's a variety of addictions, and everybody comes together and tries to find a solution.
And not only are the dragons of varying sizes, but they're all equally benign. They are as benign looking as Al, because they're not any scarier or less scary or more scary than Al is.
Right. I felt like that the treatment scene in the book would be the one that would draw in the people who've been to treatment and really cause people to laugh at themselves if they had been through treatment. Because it's such a funny situation. I mean, how do you explain even to your teenage child that you have to go away for 30 days to treatment or 28 days or whatever?
Children's literature for kids struggling with grown-up issues. We'll have more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
The MTSU Department of Art has the newest facility for visual arts in the state, with approximately 50,000 square feet of space, including high-tech computers and computer-driven equipment for multimedia, graphic design, printmaking, sculpture, painting, and ceramics. We feature a visiting artist lecture program and an exhibition program that exposes students to work by national and international artists. This is Jean Nagy, Chair of the Department of Art.
To find out more, visit mtsunews.com.
Our guest is Elaine Mitchell Palmore, who's director of the Child Development Center at MTSU and the author of The Dragon Who Lives at Our House and Big Changes in the Crow Family, two children's books to help kids deal with different kinds of difficulties in their lives. And the newest book, Big Changes in the Crow Family, takes on divorce in a similar way to the way The Dragon Who Lives in Our House took on addiction. But unlike Dragon, this one doesn't start out with an intact nuclear family. It starts out before the family is formed, before Mommy and Daddy get married, when Mom and Dad Crow are still courting. And I thought that was kind of funny. He's kind of an Elvis looking.
He is
rake.
He is. He almost looks like a ninja.
Yeah.
From the back, he has attitude. When Norris drew the illustrations for this, he said, "If we ever have dolls for these characters, I want a Dad Crow."
Yeah.
So he has that, you know, he has that attitude. And it's so funny because you can tell by looking at the pictures of them dating that there may be problems down the line because they're such different people,
yeah.
You know, or not different people, but they're different crows. You know,
right.
They're dressed differently. Mm-hmm. One is very formal. One is very, very loose and has the motorcycle. And
she looks kind of petite and demure.
She does. She does. And she has the shiny necklace on and the nice sandals. And actually, as the story progresses, she's the one who goes back to school, and he mm-hmm. supports her during that effort, but then that's when the problems start.
There are so many reasons why a family breaks up. Why did you use the financial pressures as the starting point for the reason Mom and Dad ultimately went in different directions?
Well, I felt it was an important factor, but the families are very different. You'll notice at the wedding scene, they're dressed very differently. One family is almost flamboyant with colors and feathers and all that kind of thing, and then on the other side of the aisle you have the Argyle, you know, the more conservative. I think it actually starts then, but then the money issues and, you know, having the house, and then the parents have to support them and give the, you know, they slip the dad bird a check and help them with the house. I just think that I did research on it and looked up why people get a divorce. One of them was communication, one of them was infidelity, and then money was like the third one. So I thought that the money would be a good place, a good starting point.
Because it's visible, it's tangible, it's something
it
that kids have at least some cognizance of, because that's how they get their candy and their toys.
Right.
Isn't it possible that if the parents grew apart because they had to work harder and spend less time together in order to earn enough money to support the kids, that the kids in the family might interpret that to mean that their very existence broke up the parents?
I think so. I think so. The children wrestle with what the parents tell them when they announce that they're going to get a divorce, that they no longer have anything in common. And the children question, Aren't we something that they have in common? I mean, they really are asking that. And in the research that I did, there were many, many times when the children felt like the divorce was their fault.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, in this book, they really do grow apart, and they don't make a lot of effort in the, you know, counseling or any of that kind of thing. The children go to counseling,
right.
But the parents don't. So they just decide that they're going to walk away from the marriage, and it's really sad. I mean, the body language of the birds, of the two parent birds, when they sit down and tell the children, it made me cry.
Yeah.
And people who have gone through that recently, when they get to that page, and they see this ninja warrior type dad with his shoulders down and, you know, his feathers are sort of fallen.
Right.
It's heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
It really is.
Daddy Crow feels that he's failed.
He does. He does in every phase of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to write a book about stepbrothers and stepsisters, because I had an idea that dad would go on to another life and mom would, but that's still in the making.
There are three little crow hatchlings,
right,
in this family. And what happens is that daddy becomes foreman at his nest building job.
Yes.
And mommy goes back to school and does well at university and learns how to teach. So there's an educational gap there. Not
there
that
is.
Daddy isn't smart, but
right.
He's smart in a skilled kind of way, and mommy is smart in a pedagogical kind of way.
Right.
And that's part of the divide. That's
it
part
is.
Of what splits them up.
It is. It's she has a different group of friends,
mm-hmm.
and the friends that he's hanging out with on the branch of the tree, are some different kinds of guys than she's hanging out with, and in the story they're never really together. The two types of friends are never really together. And the mother bird physically changes. She starts wearing glasses and she starts doing things a little bit differently. So that's part of the divide.
We'll have more with Elaine Mitchell-Palmore after this. This is MTSU on the Record.
Specialized training in forensic science prepares tomorrow's professionals through the Forensic Institute for Research and Education, or FIRE. The Forensic Anthropology Search and Recovery Team assists law enforcement with skeletal remains at crime scenes. Legendary forensic scientists provide lectures free to the public, and high school students work realistic crime scenes each summer at our CSI MTSU camp. I'm Dr. Hugh Berryman, Director of FIRE.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking to the director of the Child Development Center at MTSU, Elaine Mitchell-Palmore, about her children's books, The Dragon Who Lives at Our House, and Big Changes in the Crow Family. And there's a scene in the Crow Family book where the kids ask the grandparents why they never grew apart, and the grandparents just kind of look kind of embarrassed and say, well, they'll understand when they get older. Isn't when there's a divorce, there's often a generation gap between the older couples who were like raised to consider divorce a complete disgrace,
right,
and the younger couples who figure it's just another way of dealing with life, an unfortunate one, but sometimes a necessary one.
Right, right. This set of grandparents that they are asking this question are the more conservative of the grandparents, mm-hmm. Not the ones with the feathers and the Hawaiian shirts.
Right.
So they just look at the children, and the facial expressions, I think, are classic, because they say, you know, we can't help you. We can't tell you why this is happening. And they just, you know, the children just kind of go on from there. They don't push the grandparents. They just say, you know, how does this happen? You guys never grew apart. And they choose not to tell the stories of their life and their courtship and their marriage. They just choose to ignore it and get nervous that they're being asked these types of questions.
But something that is good in that grandparent scene is that Grandma and Grandpa did not take advantage of the opportunity to bash Daddy Crow.
Exactly. Exactly. They did not.
I can't imagine how you would have written the book if Mommy and Daddy Crow split up due to adultery, as many, many families do.
Right, but then it would have been Dr. Phil's book and not mine. I thought about that because when I was thinking about the Step book, you know, one of the future books, mm-hmm. I was thinking about this delightfully warm and genuine red-headed waitress that Dad falls in love with. And the book is actually written at home. I mean, I didn't not write it because they wouldn't publish it. It is written, and she is a character. Mm-hmm. But she's a very different type of person than the mom. And I thought about But there's a lot of things unsaid in that book. I mean, right. You know, Dad could have had this redheaded waitress as his wife, or Mom could have had one of the, you know, one of the people on campus or whatever. But I chose not to go there. Oh, that would have been so complicated.
That would have really complicated.
And the book would
matters.
Have been 150 pages long, and then it wouldn't have been a kid's book, you know.
Yeah. What sorts of subjects do you think you'd like to tackle in the future?
Well, I have a couple of more books written. The next one is a bully book, and it's about a little girl dog who just terrorizes everybody. She terrorizes her friends and her teachers and her parents, and her mom eventually loses her job because she has to keep running over to school to pick up the little bully. And the bully goes into her. She's punished. There are consequences for her actions, and she made some unwise choices.
Yes.
She goes into her room, and all of her electronics are taken away. So she's forced to read a book. I mean, that's as a last resort, she reads a book.
Isn't it sad we've come to the point where reading a book is punishment?
Yes.
Good grief!
But she gets one of her mother's books. Her mother has collections of books, you know. in the house. And she's never really paid any attention to him before. So she sneaks down and gets this book, and she loves it. It changes her life because it's actually a warm book, and she's transported to another time because the book was written in another time.
Yeah.
So she changes her life. She decides that she's not going to do that anymore. And there actually is a rap song at the end. That's called "Turn Your Life Around." That was recorded in this very building by one of our students. Yes,
we're in the Center for Innovation in Media in the College of Mass Communication, and MTSU, as you may know, has a thriving recording industry program here. So this female dog is not a bulldog, but a bully dog.
She's a bully dog, right?
Yes, and she's a real B word in literally and both figuratively.
She is indeed. She is indeed. Mm-hmm. She's a musician. She plays drums, and she plays drums on the lockers in the hallway between classes. I mean, she just terrorizes people, and she won't let people be in her group if they are foreign or unattractive or from someplace else or whatever. I mean, so she really bullies people in her school, and she's quite an interesting character, and I've done so much drama with children, and you have to be with her long enough to care about her. You know, so there's the story, you know, there's the storyline, and
right.
then when she turns her life around, she starts doing some things for the principal. The principal in her school starts using her for the good,
because
right. that's what everybody keeps telling her, you know, you need to use your energy for the good. And then the next book, and the only other one that is already written, is a book on obesity. Characters in this book they're the electronics again. They stay inside all the time, and they're very pale, and their mother brings in food at night in huge white bags. I mean, I can visualize it as I'm sitting here. And she texts the children, even though they're in the house. Mm-hmm. She texts the children and tells them that dinner is there. And so they, you know, they go off in that direction, and eventually the boy in the story becomes friends with a family next door who are organic gardeners. He sees them talking to each other outside and cannot imagine what parents and children would have to talk about. I mean, it's just unfathomable to him. So he gets on the internet. He and his sisters, they're invited. He is invited to a camping trip, and they get on the internet and try to decide what people wear to a camping trip, and they come up with camouflage and, you know, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The people next door have on short sleeves and flip-flops, and here he is in full camis from head to toe. And anyway, that's how that goes.
We'll talk more with Elaine Mitchell-Palmore right after this. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle Tennessee State University Women's Studies Research Series features compelling monthly talks on gender-related topics by faculty and graduate students. The series offers a chance to learn about research in progress and to chat with faculty in an informal setting. All lectures are free and open to the public and are held on the MTSU campus. This is Associate Professor of Journalism, Dr. Jane Marcellus.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with the director of the MTSU Child Development Center, Elaine Mitchell-Palmore, who has a bachelor's degree from the University of Tennessee, a master's of arts in teaching degree from Belmont College, and an early childhood and elementary education credential from the American Montessori Society.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how the work you do at the Child Development Center intersects with the inspiration for your books.
Well, occasionally we will have a family through our program that has crisis of one kind or another. And sometimes it's all the crises all at once. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be a parent that goes astray for one reason or another. And even children, our children are from 12 months to 5 years. Even when children that young have issues, they need to have books. They need to have ways that adults can explain to them what is happening.
You know, what's bizarre is that there have been scads of television programs, primetime TV shows, even before cable, on the over-the-air networks, that had episodes dealing in family-situated kinds of dramas with these tough kinds of issues before in ways that children can understand. Even teenage alcoholism, teenage addiction, addition to parents breaking up, a kid being unsure of his sexuality during the adolescent years, all these kinds of things. Why did you think it took children's literature so long to catch up? Is it because the kids are so very, very young, or is there just something in there where the powers that be were dragging behind society a little bit?
Well, I think it's all of that. But I had someone in my office the other day who picked up the Owl the Dragon book and looked at it and looked at me and frowned and said, do we really need to teach children about the disease of alcoholism? And I thought, no, we are not. This book is not to educate all the children everywhere about addiction. It's to help comfort the children in the family who already have this issue. Not an hour before I came over here, I was listening to someone who said that her church community had a member who had died in the arms of his father at 27 years old from an overdose. He had a child who is 3 and one that's 5. What in this world are those grandparents going to say to those children to explain to them what happened to their dad? And I'm telling you, there is nothing out there in the way of literature, yeah, picture books, to explain to that situation to children who are going through that.
And if you lie to them, it'll come back to bite you later.
It will. It really will.
And it'll hurt them in the long run.
But now that I have this book, people are coming to me and telling me stories. The first book signing that we did here in Murfreesboro, a lady marched through the front door, mm-hmm, and I had books on the table there, and she picked up the book and just clutched it and said, I need, with her teeth, I need this book. Yeah. And apparently she really did. I mean, she'd had this situation in her family. So people are just coming from everywhere. The book has been endorsed by the Betty Ford Clinic, which is huge. I mean, they only have like 10 books on a list. They have a packet that they have patients take with them when they leave of resources. And my book is one of their resources. And I just thought that was I was so excited about that and so humbled by it. It scared me to death.
That is mammoth.
It is.
It is like the Good Housekeeping seal of approval.
It is. It really is. I was very proud of that it's getting that kind of, you know, that kind of recognition. Several of the agencies here in Murfreesboro are using the book. They have the, mm-hmm, books for sale, or,
yeah,
you know, in some cases to give away to their clients.
Well, if people want to buy The Dragon Who Lives at Our House or Big Changes in the Crow Family, both written by Elaine Mitchell Palmore and illustrated by Norris Hall, where do they need to go? What do they need to do?
The book is at Barnes & Noble here in Murfreesboro.
Both of them?
Yes, okay. And at Hastings as well. Amazon has it. You know, most of the internet sites have it. The other day I was looking, and it's available in Germany and China and all kinds of places. So I'm really excited about that.
Elaine Mitchell Palmore, director of the MTSU Child Development Center, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.